Welcome to installment 191 of Sefer HaMitzvos from the Rambam. Today's portion contains three commandments relating to the sacrifices. Positive commandment 68, governing a sacrifice brought when the Jewish court, the Sanhedrin, has issued an erroneous ruling. Positive commandment 75, the sacrifice brought after the curing of a zava. And positive commandment 66, the sacrifice brought after a woman has given birth. Positive commandment number 68 is the sacrifice offered by a Jewish court, the Sanhedrin, after they have offered an incorrect ruling. As we've mentioned on other occasions, there is a certain category of sins of a very great severity. If a person violates such a sin, the penalty incurred is kores, or excision, a cutting off of the soul. If a person does such a sin unintentionally, b'shogeg, he must bring a chatas, a certain type of sin offering. If the Jewish court is approached for a ruling on a particular difficult issue, whether something is allowed to be done or not, or allowed to be eaten, or so forth, and the Jewish court offers a ruling, and the congregation acts on that ruling, and it turns out later that the ruling was incorrect, and that based on the Jewish court's ruling, they have violated a prohibition of such magnitude that they would be punishable by kores, or to have to bring a chatas, as we described before, in such a case, the Jewish court is required to bring a special type of sacrifice. And this is positive commandment number 68, what's known as a par helam dover, a bull, which is brought as a sacrifice in the event of helam dover, when a certain ruling has been hidden from the eyes of the Jewish court. This commandment is learned from the book of Leviticus, chapter 4, verse 13, and the portion immediately following, which begins, V'im kol adas Yisrael yishku, if the entire Jewish community commits an inadvertent violation, v'nelam dover me'enei hakol, as a result of the truth being hidden from the eyes of the congregation. The congregation we're speaking up here, speaking of, is not the entire congregation, Me'enei HaKol, but rather the Jewish court, and in particular the Bez Din HaGadol, the highest Jewish court containing 71 members. In addition, when is the sacrifice actually involved? Only when people act based on the ruling of this court, and not only individuals, as the verse says, Kol Adas Yisrael, the entire Jewish community. Therefore, in order for such a sacrifice to be in force, a majority or the entire Jewish people must have violated a prohibition based on this ruling of the Jewish court. In such a case, the court has to bring the sacrifice whether they themselves did the violation or not. Since they gave an incorrect ruling, and based on that ruling, everyone transgressed a violation, they themselves must bring the sacrifice. The details of this commandment are taught in the tractates Horios and Zvachim. This sacrifice was very unusual in several respects. Firstly, the blood of this sacrifice was sprinkled inside the heichal. As we mention in our daily prayers in Yizel Makayman, the introductory section of Mishnayos before the beginning of the morning services, V'damen ta'on hazoya ala pareches al mizbach hazav, its blood was sprinkled on the curtain separating the Holy of Holies from the holy section, and also on the golden altar. This offering is one of those entitled Ponim HaNisrafim, the bulls which are burned. Since this was taken outside any holy place and completely consumed by fire in such a place, we now begin those laws associated with a certain type of impurities. When people are not allowed to resume the consumption of sanctified meat or konshim until they have brought certain sacrifices. These are the laws of Mechusare Kapoda, those that are still lacking as complete atonement after their impurification. The first law discussed is positive commandment number 75, which is the sacrifice brought by a zava upon conclusion of her purification. To briefly explain the law of a zava, a zav means literally a flowing, and is speaking to a woman that has blood issuing from her womb. This is different, legally speaking, from a woman who is in nida, in a regular menstrual period, in a number of respects. A woman is only considered a zava when it comes at a non-regular time. After a woman begins her period, for example, she is considered to be impure generally for 7 days. After this 7-day period has concluded, the Torah dictates an 11-day period, which is the minimum in which a woman would not normally see a menstrual flow a second time, or as the Chumash expresses it, loy es nidosa, not the regular time for a menstrual flow. If, during these 11 days, a woman does see blood again, after the conclusion of a regular menstrual flow, this abnormal flow is called zivos, a flowing, and has a different purification in comparison with the law of a regular menstrual woman, a nida. A woman who has had a regular menstrual flow after her 7-day period, according to biblical law, may immerse herself in a mikveh and is immediately considered pure. She must not count any clean days and must not bring any sacrifices. The law of a zava, a woman who has seen at an irregular time, is that she must, upon the conclusion of the flow of blood, count 7 clean days, and only thereafter immerse herself in a mikveh. And then she can bring the necessary sacrifices and resume the consumption of sanctified food. From Talmudic days, the custom of Jewish women has been to treat any flow of blood identically, whether it would be nida or ziva. Therefore, the law is today that any woman who has blood issuing from her womb must, upon the conclusion of the blood flow, count 7 clean days, since everything is treated as if it was a flow of zivus, an irregular discharge. The sacrifices brought upon the conclusion of her purification are the commandment we're discussing here, Positive Commandment 75, and they consist of 2 birds, either turtle doves or 2 young pigeons. The Rambam has in this commandment a rather complex discussion involving the counting of the commandments. Just as there is a zava, a woman who becomes impure as a result of an irregular discharge, so too there is a law of a zav, a similar law applying to a male. This time, rather than blood issuing from his organ, as it would be in the case of a woman, he himself has a seminal-type discharge emitting from his organ, and he is as impure as a woman who was a zava. In fact, his purification is even more severe, since he must be purified only by well water rather than a regular mikveh. He also requires sacrifices at the conclusion of his purification period. However, here the Rambam asks, why is this counted as a separate commandment? The sacrifices of the male zav and the female zava should be the same. This could be compared to the sacrifices. There are, for example, many different people who would have to bring a chatas, a sin offering, based on the many different type of violations that they might have performed. Nevertheless, we do not say that there is one commandment of the 613 for this violation requiring a sin offering, and another one for this type of violation. What we look at, says the Rambam, is the type of sacrifice. And anyone who needs a certain type of sacrifice is included in this one commandment. Why, asks the Rambam, is it not the same in this case? Both the zav and the zava, the male and female, require the same sacrifice. Why then should it count as 2 separate commandments? The Rambam says, however, we cannot compare the cases. Over here, the sacrifices are not the result of a sin. The sacrifices are the result of a physical condition. And although the Hebrew name for the physical condition are basically identical, zav and zava, nevertheless, in one case, it's a one type of physical condition, bleeding, and the other one, a seminal emission. And therefore, they're completely dissimilar. If the physical condition was the same, the Rambam says you would be right. Their purification would only count as one commandment, regardless of whether they're male or female. This is the same as the case of a leper. the purification sacrifices offered by a male leper and a female leprous upon the conclusion of their purification do not count as two commandments. It's one commandment. So, too, in this case, if it would be the same physical condition. But since there are different physical conditions, the fact that they have the same Hebrew name does not count them as one commandment. The Rambam proves this from the Talmudic tractate Krisus, which mentions there are four people, four different types of individuals who must bring offerings upon the conclusion of their purification. They are listed as a leper, a woman after childbirth, and then a zav and a zava. And in this case, they are counted separately. Therefore, we see their separate commandments. The final commandment of today's portion is positive commandment number 76, which, as we just mentioned, is the sacrifice involving a woman after she has given birth. The Torah tells us in the book of Leviticus, chapter 12, that after childbirth, a woman has 33 days of Yemei Tayar in the case of a boy being born, and 66 days when a girl is born. At the end of this time period, she must bring the sacrifices of a child, a woman who was given birth. And these sacrifices are the commandment number 76. What must she bring? One ola, a burnt offering, and one chatas, a sin offering. The Torah says that if she can afford it, she should bring one lamb and one bird, either a pigeon or a dove. If she cannot afford it, then she can bring two birds. One of the birds would be a burnt offering, and one a sin offering. Why does she have to bring a burnt offering? To express her thanks, having come through this dangerous situation, and to thank God for having her give birth to a child. Why does she have to bring a sin offering? All she's done is given birth. Our sages explain that because of the pain of childbirth, a woman utters a vow that she will never again cohabit with her husband. Nevertheless, after she gives birth, she again goes back to her husband. When she gives birth the second time, she makes the same vow in the middle of, typically makes this vow in the middle of childbirth. Since she has made a false vow again, she must bring a chatas, a sin offering. Another explanation has it that this is not to atone for her sin, but rather the sin of the mother of all people, of Chava, who brought evil into the world as a result of the sin of the eating of the fruit in the Garden of Eden. It is interesting to point out the quality of the different time periods for boy and for girls, which is often seized upon by women's liberationists as a proof that the Torah considers women to be impure. It should be pointed out, however, that there are two aspects governing these laws. For the entering into the temple, the law is that she cannot enter until 33 days after the birth of a boy and 66 after the birth of a girl. However, on the other hand, she is considered more pure in a way after a girl is born, because this is called Dam Tehad. This is called pure blood. And the biblical law has it that as long as she is in this time period, she is permitted to her husband even though she is bleeding. It's not considered menstrual blood and does not make her impure to her husband. Therefore, after a boy is born, she has this more pure status for only 33 days. But when after a girl is born, she has it for 66 days. Today, of course, rabbinical law has it that we treat the birth of a boy or a girl exactly the same, and immediately after her 1 or 2 week period, she returns to the regular laws governing the menstrual cycle. Thank you for tuning in to the daily portion of Sefer Mitzvahs. For more information or to sponsor one of the installments, contact Sichas in English at area code 718-778-5436. That's 718-778-5436. And please join us again tomorrow.